Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome. We're so glad that you are here, and I hope that you've joined in on our 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting. Our habit for the week we are talking about is modeling your faith, being authentic about it, and letting your kids into what is going on in your faith journey, whether that be your prayer practices, whether that be your daily devotional, whether that be just what you're learning from the Lord in this time in your life. And today, we're going to talk to a dad and a ministry leader who is doing just that. So today we've got Brandon Kennard. Brandon is a husband of 24 years, a father of five. You have me beat by one, Brandon. He has been in student ministry for over two decades, and he's the ministry director for Youth for Christ Houston, the family pastor for Church on Masters Road, and the life coach for Manville High School. We're definitely going to talk about that. Brandon is passionate about reaching the next generation, and he helps kids understand that if they have breath, then they have purpose. And that's a great message to send. So Brandon, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
It is an honor to share our stories, isn't it?
Yes.
And I would love to hear your story, Brandon. How did you come to know the Lord and receive a calling into ministry?
Well, I would say to kind of summarize different stages of that is when I was 10, God really healed my body with the faith of my dad. And through that, I came to know who he was and built a relationship with him. But went through high school just as a kind of a good kid. Didn't really get on fire for God, in a sense. But it wasn't until my mid-20s that I think God just got a hold of me and surrounded me with a bunch of guys. And we just started doing ministry together. And I just started learning what it really means to have a relationship with him. And through that, God just kind of walked me through different stages of life, but drew me closer to him each step away. And the way I got into ministry is kind of funny because I used to be one of the network administrators for the fifth largest law firm in the nation.
Oh, in downtown, I did not expect that.
In downtown Houston. And God really just told me to learn more about his word. And so I went into it wasn't a credited seminary. It was just a guy who has been in ministry for like 50 years and was teaching classes. So I just went into those classes, kind of starting to learn. And through that, I started a Bible study at the law firm, and I ended up having 60 ladies show up.
Wow.
So it was all the receptionists and secretaries. None of the lawyers showed up, but It was all them. And we just started having Bible studies. And so it was me and 60 ladies.
I'm having trouble picturing this.
Yeah.
It was. This is kind of funny.
It was kind of crazy. I started doing that at the law firm. We could use the conference room. Then they kicked us out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we rented out the library in downtown Houston.
Really?
Uh-huh. And started doing that and just started. It was just a weird moment in life that I look back on that God was just starting something and stirring something in me. And through that, I decided, you know what? I think God's called me into ministry. And right before the summer that year, I told my wife, who we were just recently married, that I was going to go into ministry and quit that job. And then a month later became a summer intern for the Met. As their one of their student guys.
Mm-hmm.
So making a good amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer,
summer interns, they're paid really well.
I made a total of $1,100.
Wow.
Yep. And we were just recently married and all that kind of stuff. So God had me on a path. And so through that, just each time, God's got me going to a different ministry and brought me into different aspects of it and grew me. And and so through that, I went into different churches and started student ministry and just got to where we are today.
You know, I think the thing for our listeners to take away from that is that so many times I've sat across the microphone and heard people's stories, and they don't say, you know, one day God spoke to me in a booming voice and said, Jessica, you're going to have a radio show. Like, it doesn't work like that. It's just you are faithful in those little steps. And when you say yes to God every day, he equips you for what he's calling you to do. And then when you get to that calling, like, you're ready to do that. Well, I want to backtrack for just a little bit, Brandon. I want to hear a little bit more about your dad, because the habit for healthy parenting that we're talking about on the show this week is modeling your faith to your kids, being authentic about your faith. In what ways did your dad model his faith? How did you see that? What did it look like in your everyday life?
So I was raised in a Christian home. My dad was a hard worker. Work ethic was big. My dad would get up at 3 a.m. and go to work every day. He got his GED. He didn't go to college. He went into the Army. He just knew that he had to outwork everyone to advance in any industry that he was in. And so my dad really taught us how to really take a job and be the best at it. But then also through that, he showed a lot of times on how to have faith. There's stories that they would tell us that when my mom and dad were just recently married, they didn't have money for a refrigerator and they were using an ice chest, and they just prayed. And just some people came by and
said, randomly
and gave them a refrigerator. So just seeing that, you know, through that, him knowing that it's the faith, his faith is what brought me to actually know who Jesus truly is. Taking me to church and saying, hey, we're going to believe that you're going to get healed from this. And through that, through his faith, because I didn't know what was going on. I was just 10. Mm-hmm. I was just being obedient to my dad. But it was always through his faith that we saw God do a lot of things. And so I've taken a lot of that from him, that knowing that God's in control. I just have to have faith that he's going to be there with us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's really interesting because when I'm asking you about his faith, you're not saying we made sure I was in all the best schools and that I had all the right clothes and the right opportunities. I mean, and we've been talking about that all week. It seems to be coming up as a recurrent theme. That's where we're investing our time and treasure. If you look at your credit card and your calendar as parents, a lot of times that's where we feel the pull to put our resources there. But you're talking about just everyday simple faith practices, like praying that God would give them a refrigerator and mm-hmm. not use an ice chest. I think that's really amazing. So how does your role now you're a dad of five kids, and we've already established we're in the same life phase. We're parenting teenagers and what I call, Brandon, quasi adults, because they're technically adults, as they will frequently remind me, yet they're not the I pay a mortgage kind of an adult. So, you know, I pay for their life, you know, so there's that kind of adult. We're in that same. But how did that change you and inform and influence your ministry? Because, you know, I think about back when I was a pediatric nurse just starting out and I didn't have kids, and these moms would come in and parents would have problems. Their kids would be sick or injured or have behavioral trouble. And I would feel compassion for them, you know, of course. But after I became a mom, it was a lot different. You know, by that time, then I'm saying, hey, can I bring a casserole over tonight? Like, do you want me to move in with you for a week? It changes your perspective. So how has that journey been for you as a dad?
Well, I can say as when I first started in ministry and being around students and parents, this hasn't changed. I've always done biblical answers. The Bible has all the answers for any problem, parenting-wise or kid-wise. So I always use that as my guide. But once I had kids of my own, because I was only with those kids for a short period of time each week, but once I had kids... I was just drenched with their lives mm-hmm. nonstop. And so then you start seeing a whole lot more than just what an hour can show you. And through that time of being with my own kids, you start feeling like, oh, so this is what the parent was really kind of trying to tell me.
Yeah.
You know, they would say something and I'd be like, well, here's the answer for that. That's easy. But then when you're in it,
right,
and you get the same question, you have a different perspective about it, I mm-hmm. think. And so you can see, oh, I can see how this question really means this, because you've been through a whole lot more. This has been going on. Mm-hmm. This isn't just a 30-minute little problem that can be solved with two Bible verses and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of how it's changed, the way I've done ministry mm-hmm. and actually talk to parents. I've had a pastor actually tell me, who was pastoring with me at a church, he said my voice had a lot of power behind it mm-hmm. in the sense of whenever I told kids, hey, this is what you should be doing, mm-hmm. they would go home and tell their parent that. And I never really thought my voice had that kind of power or anything like that. But hearing that kind of talk from another parent saying, hey, mm-hmm. you're telling my kids who wanted to go in ministry. I said, well, we'll go into ministry then. But he's like, but my dad wants me to go to college. Mm-hmm. So what do I do? Well, you know, the biblical way, I'm just saying, well, you do what God's called you to do. Whatever mm-hmm. that is, that's what you do. And the parent was like, well, I mean, I need him to go to college, you know?
Yeah.
And so now that I have kids in college, uh-huh. it makes a lot more sense of, you know, how to do things, how to talk to people, how to, when you say things, hey, we want you to do what God's called you to do. And there's different pathways to get that mm-hmm. done. And so it's just made me have more perspective on probably the way I answer mm-hmm. more than anything. Still use the Bible through the whole thing, but just probably a little bit more perspective on it.
Absolutely. Just a different compassion, a different empathy, a different understanding of the nuances of it. I think mm-hmm. before, and for other people, you know, you're standing on the outside, things can look so simple, but then really it is complex and you need a partnership there. Well, I'm interested, Brandon, because, you know, you do youth ministry for a living. You've called yourself a student guy, a youth guy. And I think sometimes that can be challenging as a dad, because I know my kids feel like this. They're like, oh, we don't need a nurse right now. We just want you to be my mom. You know, they'll say, they just want me to be goofy or silly or not, you know, overanalyze them or that kind of thing. Do you encounter that as a dad? Like, how do you differentiate your role as a youth minister? How leverage those skills that you have and that worldview that you have, but also be a dad?
I think, I don't know if I've had where they say, hey, can you stop being a student pastor mm-hmm. and just be my dad? I don't think I've ever had that conversation. I think mostly way me and my wife have raised our kids is such on a biblical base mm-hmm. where we teach them, here's our answers. It's not my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's what God says. And so if you are still mad, you're going to be mad at God, not mad at me, because I'm just telling you what he said. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times as my kids have struggled through things, they probably...
Wait, your kids have struggled? Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Like, they still do.
Your kids yeah. are human?
Very much so. It's interesting that they seem perfect when they're out in public.
Yeah.
But then when they get in the house, like something happens. Like a switch turns off and they just turn into, you know, whatever.
Kids.
The regular kids.
Yeah, yes. Regular kids. Yeah.
But just them really kind of talking, sometimes they'll tell me almost to where like, okay, you're preaching too much mm-hmm. in a sense. Like you're telling us too much of the Bible. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds bad, but in the sense of, hey, can you just listen to me in a sense? So, because I always want, and as a male, I always want to fix things. And so I try to fix it, even if it's with the Bible. They're just like, hey, I just need a dad just to listen. So,
you know, I was just talking about this today, actually, on my Instagram, and we were talking about Taylor Swift's new album that's come out. And really what I said was that the pull of that and the pull of this culture is that kids, ultimately, they want to be seen, they want to be known, and they want to be loved. Mm-hmm. And they can feel that through either being a Swiftie or whatever, you know, identity that they have. There are so many opportunities and pulling forces, I think, from the world. But kids today, parents ask me all the time what kids need. They need a listening ear. And it's so hard, Brandon, because we lead with lecturing a lot because we know how to fix their problems. And, oh, this is so simple. And if you just do this, you're going to stay out of so much trouble. And, you know, oh, this is easy. Just do this. But if we can train ourselves to listen and to listen with our faces, oh my goodness, what a transformation that would be. Well, when we come back, I'll tell you a quick story about that and a community event that I did with youth. And we're going to ask Brandon about Youth for Christ and the challenges that he sees facing youth ministry today. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Brandon Kennard. Why is our society so ravenous to abort babies? According to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents, and sickly believe their blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle, and their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. And every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, welcome back. We are talking to Brandon Kennard today. We're talking to him. He's a husband of 24 years, a dad of five. He's a student ministry guy. We have had a student ministry week yesterday. We talked to Tim McKnight on Engaging Generation Z, which was a fabulous conversation. If you are in youth ministry, if you have a kid, if you know a kid, you should take a listen. It was really a great conversation. And just before the break, Brandon and I were talking about how kids want more than anything for us to listen to them. So, Brandon, I told you I would tell you this story. Not too long ago, I did a community event where we had a suicide prevention effort for parents and their kids. And as everybody walked into the church auditorium, I had two tables on each side with brown paper and sticky notes all over them. And on one of the tables for the kids, I asked the question, what are you too scared to ask your parents for? And, oh, the parents came running over to that table. You know, they wanted to know. And it was amazing to me because all over on these little yellow sticky notes, I have a video of it, they said one word, and it was listen. They just want to be heard. And if we listen to them, it doesn't mean that we don't give them advice. It just means we wait a minute. We validate their emotion. And that is what kids are wanting. We have this generation that is so digitally connected, but so relationally disconnected. And so I want to dive in to your youth ministry. And just hilarious, Brandon, that you've gone from a law firm with 60 ladies in a Bible study to youth ministry. This is God saying, get up and go to the land. I will show you, Brandon. That is how God works. But I would love to know what you see as challenges facing youth today. What is the landscape of your view? Just help us sit where you're seeing, and what does it look like?
As I've been with these students for a little while, a lot of things that I have noticed is the lack of, as you've been saying, listening to them, but even more showing that you actually really do care. I think a lot of people want to fix things or talk about fixing things, but rarely will we take the time to actually show that we actually care enough to try to help them. I think we try to give them one word answers or quick little things to fix things instead of investing into their lives and showing them that there's more to this and how we can really help them advance in whatever aspect that may be, but really spend the time loving on them and listening to them at the same time.
I think you're right, because so often, you know, adults will come in and they just want to fix what they want to fix. Or sometimes I see adults who are just curious about things. And so youth may say something, they may disclose something, but then there's no follow-up. There's no relationship. And they're just looking for that context of caring. I think a lot of this comes from their digital interactions, where the electronic world is so cold. And we see this, and I talk about this all the time, in kids who face something called order anxiety, where they can't even go up and talk to the person that they they need to order something, they just want to do it online because they feel so ill-equipped for in-person interactions and relationships. And I just saw some retail research released yesterday saying from Gen Z that more than 70% wish that they did not have to interact with anyone at a store. So we've got this disconnect where they're lonely. It's the loneliest generation we've ever seen. And yet they don't know how to connect. So what are some tips that you would have for people who are working in youth ministry or want to start a conversation? And I think especially grandparents, because grandparents have time, whereas parents don't have. What are some ways that you can be authentic with kids and just listen?
I think a lot of things is finding ways to mentor kids. There's many avenues, lots of nonprofits, lots of churches even, that are trying to get into these students' lives and mentor them. Even a study just kind of goes into our ministry. We have found out, the study shows, in our students that are in detention centers, if those kids actually have a mentor when they get out, they only have a 40% chance of going back.
That's pretty good.
If they don't have a mentor, it's 85% going back.
Wow.
But if they have a mentor that actually is faith-based, Christian-based, it's 11%.
Go back.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. And when we tell people that, it shocks them.
Yeah, you shocked me.
But it also just shows the power of actually being a mentor, actually being a part of their lives. And what I mean by mentor, I don't mean just having a conversation with them, but like, what are you doing this weekend? Hey, you want to go get this? Hey, you want to go here? Hey, if they're in a sport, I'm going to come to your game. Like, really be involved in their lives. I think a lot of times we as adults, we want them just to come to us.
Mm.
And what we really need to be doing is going to them and being a part of their world. Because as you've been saying with social media and all that kind of stuff, I think a lot of times these students are feeling like they get judged on everything. And especially like social media, they got to post the best photo, whatever it is, because they know people are going to be looking at it. And I think that's why a lot of people don't want to talk, and because they think instantly it's just like social media, where instantly they're going to be judged on whatever they're saying, whatever they're doing, or however they're acting. And so it's a struggle, but just really kind of walking them through that and having conversations and just, I know it's simple, but love really does conquer. And just loving on them. I think they really miss what true unconditional love really looks like.
It really does. And you're right. You and I were talking even before the show about how it's hard for adults who didn't grow up in Generation Z. So adults who grew up in Gen X, like we did, or millennials or boomers, because you don't understand what it's like to be in a world that's on all the time, where every word can be judged. You can be canceled for anything. And kids are childish. They do make mistakes. They do say thoughtless things. And just imagine if somebody was walking around following you at the tape recorder all day long, you know, taping every word that you say. We all say thoughtless, careless things that we don't mean. And I think you made a good point, Brandon, about the viral trends, because the way that we see these work is TikTok trends are the same. So everybody will take this specific TikTok challenge, right? And they're all replicating it, but in their own way. So one of the popular ones right now is, you know, of course I'm a pediatric nurse, and then I'll say everything that I do about that, right?
Right.
So these kids post it and they see, oh, my friends got 487 likes. Mine got 2. So what's wrong with me?
Right. The clearly comparison, the judgment. Yes.
Yes, exactly. So it's so much there. And it's interesting to me because when I see kids in clinic, I'll ask them, I usually say, what social media platform do you have? Because we know that about 90% of kids today use social media platforms. Just a big shout out to the 10% of parents who are holding the line and waiting as long as possible. But I'll ask them, when they tell me their platform, I'll say, how many followers do you have? Oh, they know down to the person. It is amazing to me how much they know. And I think that we need organizations that are providing mentorship, which really brings us to what you've given us a preview of already, Youth for Christ. How did this ministry come to be? What do you do? And did it really start in 1944? Because that's what I read.
So Billy Graham's the one that started it.
I did not realize that connection.
And through that was Billy Graham would come and they do their big crusades.
Yeah.
What he was noticing is they would do the crusade and they'd leave. But what do you do with the kids now? And so he says, we got to stop doing that. So they created the mentorship concept and the ministry model that YFC actually runs now through that, because all these students needed somebody to continue whatever happened after the crusade. And so that's how it all kind of started.
Really? So what does it look like today?
So YFC is international. I think it's in 120 countries. There is over, I think, 1,300 campus life clubs all over America, and even in some different other countries. We have 9 different ministry models. The ones that mostly are used is the Juvenile Detention Center, JJM, and then Campus Life. But they have deaf ministry, they have military ministry, but it's all the same kind of concept. We're trying to reach these kids. And the main thing about YFC is we want to reach the non-church kids. We want to reach kids that don't want to go to church, don't want anything to do with it. And how do we reach them and show them who Jesus truly is and how he truly does love them? And so we do that through those models. We try to really kind of be, as I said, be great listeners and actually be good people who will give great questions and start making them think about it. Because I don't know if people really realize these kids don't really think about a whole lot of things, especially when it comes to mm-hmm. deep subject matters. So even in our clubs, our campus life clubs, I threw out the question, what is mental health? You know, why are we always talking about it now? Because I told them, my dad never talked about mental health. I've never had a mental health day. My dad never had one. Mm-hmm. So what happened to us? Like, what all happened? And it was pretty profound. One high school kid during this time said, I believe our generation has normalized so many things. And then he said, and the number one thing that they have normalized is laziness.
Mm.
And that was pretty shocking, actually.
Yeah, from really a kid.
Hit. Uh-huh. And just kind of talking through that. And so making other kids hear that and then them starting to talk. And so we have just created an atmosphere. This is what our ministry model is. An atmosphere where kids can ask questions, have thoughts, where I'm not just saying, hey, you're wrong, don't stop doing that, you know, or whatever it may be. But really just talk to them and then walk them through it. And then through that, show them the biblical answers to that, with almost sometimes not even them realizing it.
I think what you've said is really profound, because in saying it's almost offensive, Brandon, when you say that kids don't think a lot, but I think you're right. And I think one of the reasons that they don't think deeply is because they have trained themselves to be numb by using mm-hmm. their phone. So anytime this generation cannot tolerate a moment alone, or whether they're alone with their thoughts, and really now we do it as adults too. Like, you, if you have a moment to yourself, your immediate thought is feeling your pocket or your purse right. or your phone, and you just start scrolling. And Brandon, when you start scrolling, I mean, it can be 2 hours. And this is where I say, like, cat videos, my husband gets offended. Honey, I know you're listening. Also sports videos and dog videos. And not everybody watches cat videos. But really, it numbs your mind. And it makes you not have to think. And I think that's why it's this generation's drug of choice. Mm-hmm. Because that is what they're using. And we had Dr. George Barna on the show this week. And he mentioned a concept called Socratic questioning, which I actually wanted to go back to. And so we'll do that today. Thank you, Dr. Barna. But that's just asking open-ended questions. A lot of times we think as parents that we have to lecture our way into their worldview, but they're not going to receive it that way. And of course, they don't have all the answers. And when we ask them questions, of course, they say things that are foolish and unwise and, you know, just because they're young. Right. But asking them the questions and getting them to think that out loud and talk it out, like if they say something that doesn't make sense, saying, okay, well, tell me, walk that further. Mm-hmm. Show me how that works. Like, what do you think about that? That is such a powerful place to be. Well, I read online, Brandon, that YFC pursues young people, and I'm reading from the website here, who often feel overlooked, to build relationships at pivotal moments. This is so important in today's culture, because the world is looking to pounce on those pivotal moments. Mm-hmm. Because when they have a question, a crisis, they're mostly going to turn to their phone. whether that's through social media or Google or whatever it is. So how does YFC meet them where they are and connect them to Christ? How do you be a pivotal moment that shapes their story?
I think that really goes down to our ministry model of mentoring is where it really comes down to, because the club that I do, or even JJM where we're there for like 30 minutes or an hour. Mm-hmm. And there may be a pivotal moment in that time frame, but majority of those pivotal moments come during life. And so our mentors are trying to be a part of their life completely. So like engaging in the things that they do and being a part of the stuff that they love to do. And through those moments, they start asking more questions, because you're not only just talking to them, you're living with them in the sense of you're just being a part of their lives. And through that, they feel more comfortable and trust you and will start opening up a whole lot more. And when that starts happening, these pivotal moments, I think you start seeing it. And that's when a mentor can really start pouring into it. But it can be a year, 2 years. It's the long haul. It's not just some quick 2 weeks and I fix this kid. I've had so many parents bring their kid to me, which you would consider the professional. I'm going to bring him to the professional student pastor. Uh-huh. And we've had him for 16 years, but can you fix him in 10 minutes? You know? Yeah. So we've had a lot of those moments, and it just doesn't work that way. None of us do. It takes time to actually, you know, only Jesus can fix you instantly. Mm-hmm. But it takes us time to actually walk through a bunch of stuff, because a lot of these kids are going through a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And they got to work through all those things out. And that's why it's so pivotal to have mentors to walk through these kids.
Brandon, you're singing my song, because I talk about this all the time, that as parents, we live in a world of instant gratification, and we do not have tolerance for long-term problems. Mm. I say this, I've said it before, I'm saying it again. Wesley Wildman, I'm talking to you. We treat our kids like chia pets, like we're a online help. You know how you get on a website and the little box comes up in the corner and says, how can I help you? That's what we do to our kids. They come to us with a problem and we're like, oh, yes, how may I help you? Okay, please follow this prompt. Please do this. And you know, that's really, does this answer your question? No, it doesn't answer my question. But then we'll say, okay, please take a survey of our performance and we'd love to know how we did. And as parents, we try to control their behavior because that gives us instant gratification that, hey, we're good parents. When we realize that good kids have struggles, good kids can have challenges, and we have got to be patient for the long game and realize that even in our own lives, Brandon, I'm sure you can attest, there are things that I'm still really stubborn about that God's trying to teach me. It takes a little bit of time. Well, when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about this ministry that was started by Billy Graham, Youth for Christ, YFC. And we're going to talk about the three story and the three circle model. Many of you may know this already. And we're going to talk about sports, because y'all know my husband thinks there's no parenting problem that can't be solved without a sports analogy. So that'll come when we come back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends out there listening on the radio. Hello to friends listening on the podcast, and hello to my friends on Facebook. I've got some friends that I met when I was in the studio, so it's good to see you, Charles and Susie. It's good to see you also, Tina. Thanks for joining us online. And we are talking today to Brandon Kennard. We're having a really great conversation about youth ministry, and I really didn't plan this, but it ended up being Youth Ministry Week, so that's just self-declared. We're just going to go with it, and that's okay. And we were talking about Youth for Christ, YFC, which is a ministry that I just learned was started by Billy Graham back in 1944 and is still impacting kids today. So, Brandon, one of the things that you use is three story, and you use three circles for three stories to help shape a child's life story. So tell us what that is and how you use it in your ministry.
So the three circle story and logo, it's our logo. It's basically this is everyone has their own story. So you're one circle and your story means a lot. And then the person that you're talking to, they have a story. And so what connects both of us is God's story in both of our lives. And so sometimes you don't realize that God's story is inside that those two circles, but through a relationship and you're building that relationship, you start seeing that my circle intertwines with your circle because I may have gone through that same problem that you have, but I also know that God has an answer for these problems. And so we use these circles to kind of explain on how this is how we share the gospel in a sense. I'm going to tell you my story. And through that, you're going to hear how God has blessed me or has changed my life. And I want to hear your story and how what's been going on with your life. And they may not talk about God or anything that doesn't, but I want to hear your story. And then through that, I'm going to show you how God can be a part of your story as he's been a part of mine, and that how that brings us all together.
And what impact do you see that have when kids realize their story and they're able to formulate it, just like you said? What kind of impact do you think that you see with that?
I think a lot of times it's the first time they've ever shared it. A lot of times it's the first time they've ever verbally said, this is who I am. Because like we've been talking about, they don't really talk a whole lot unless they've been provoked to have those conversations. And because they've been provoked to have this conversation, they start saying things and they start realizing what they're saying. Because the way that I talk to them is I listen to them, and then a lot of times I'll repeat what they said. And not just to be repetitive, but for them to hear their own words. And through that, they start realizing, well, maybe I don't want to be that, or maybe I need to do more of that. And so you start seeing an impact because they actually had a time where I didn't tell them their story was wrong. I didn't tell them that, hey, your story's on the wrong track. I just want you to tell me your story because I know God has a story for you too, and he wants to be a part of it. And so you see a huge impact when you give them the ability just to share and actually listen to that you actually do care about their story.
You know, what's really striking to me about that is in this generation, we see a significant identity crisis. And kids engage in what is called image crafting, where they try to craft their image on social media or whatever digital media that they have, or even in real life, you know, trying to craft their image. And we as parents and caring adults have got to give them the message that their story is that they were created by God. They were created in the image of God. And anything that we try to replicate on our own is just a pitiful substitute. And I'll tell you a story, Brandon, about my own daughter. So when my oldest was 13, she had actually just been to a camp where she learned about this story concept. And I picked her up and we had to drive a long way because I was taking her actually to a cheerleader camp. And I knew I was going to have to drive her across town. And one of my colleagues called me and said, hey, my daughter is going through a divorce and she's really upset. Can you call her? And I said, yes, absolutely, I'll call her. And she said, I just don't want to be alone. I said, well, I'm driving across town. Do you want to just ride with me? And she said, yes, I do. So she gets in the car and she just poured her heart out and just, it really ended in a spiritual place. And I'm going to be honest, like I was a nurse and this was a while ago and I kind of was stumbling, like thinking, oh gosh, okay, this is where I'm supposed to share the hope of the gospel. And I was trying to formulate my thoughts. And then I hear my 13-year-old in the back seat just say, hey, can I tell you a story? I can relate to some of the things that you're saying. And she started drawing three circles. And before I knew it, she had taken the whole conversation and done it. And it was so beautiful. It was such a great model to me. I was humbled, like absolutely humbled, and thinking about the scripture, like don't let anyone look down on you because you are young, but set an example. And she set an example for me that day because she knew her story and she could relate to this woman who was obviously older than her going through a divorce. You would think that there was nothing relatable there, but she found that through their story. I think that's so absolutely amazing. Well, she did that in the summer, and summer is a unique time, Brandon, especially it's an intense time for youth guys, right? But kids have opportunities for really rich, immersive spiritual experiences. So what do you do in the summer for YFC? What kind of opportunities do you see there?
So, and every summer we try to put on a summer camp. Sometimes we, just go and take kids to a camp that's already run and they already have their things going on. But also sometimes like this year we're partnering with another church and we're going with the church, with YFC and going to their camp that they're going to be a part of. And so we try to get these kids to see the opportunity that summer camp can have. Like I told you, these are not church kids. These are not kids that would step into a church. And to try to share with them, you have to have a different strategy in a sense. Mm-hmm. So like this year we're going to Orange Beach, Alabama. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the beach. You know, it's pretty yeah. water. It's not Galveston water, you know, like all that kind
brown
of stuff.
Brown and right? foamy with right. rattlesnakes.
Right. So there's that enticement so that you can get them there so that they can hear the gospel of who Jesus truly is. And so it's a little bit different in the sense of the approach than mm-hmm. it would be a church setting in a sense. But we try to give them opportunities to go to camp. And then we kind of try to have some events. We throw out a calendar every summer and say, hey, we're going to meet at the snow cone place, or we're going to do this. Because what we are so highly relational, mm-hmm. we're always trying to build on that relationship. And so those are all very little small little moments. Mm-hmm. It's not really the big camp, which we want everybody to go to, but it's that me and this other guy, this young man, just having, you know, a shake, mm-hmm. you know, and just sitting across the table and having conversations. And so
that's exactly what we talked about with Tim McKnight yesterday, and talking about how it's not the flashiest, most over-the-top, expensive, technical, state-of-the-art, you know, ministry that is going to change the hearts and lives right. of kids. It is just what you're talking about and what Tim talked about and what Dr. Barna talked about, just simple relationships. And how can our listeners pray specifically for kids who are going to be in camp this summer at YFC? How can we pray for you?
I think the biggest prayer that we could get is one, for more volunteers to be a part of it. So the adults to be able to pour into these kids' lives that will make decisions after, because after camp, it's not like it ends. It's really the beginning. And so to have these volunteers and these adults to be there to guide them through all that would be our biggest prayer. And then usually, unfortunately, there's a lot of financial problems mm. with a lot of kids that we try to reach. And so we apply for grants and all that kind of stuff to get kids to go to camp and try to make the cost as low as we can. But as we have seen, everything is higher now, and camp is really expensive. And so just try to get them to be able to buy into it, but then also be able to afford it. So just praying that the right people will come and can help and with their time or money, and then just definitely just be praying that hearts will be changed.
And that somebody's going to show up to exchange a refrigerator for and for a cooler, right?
That's
like
correct.
That's what it's going to be.
Right.
I think that's so amazing, because so many times kids, especially kids that you're talking about who have experienced a lot of trauma, who have lived a lot more life than a lot of other kids and just had a lot of really hardships and hard experiences. I think sometimes when they're in their everyday life, it's hard for them to imagine anything else, and they just kind of get in this rut. But taking them to a beautiful place and taking them out of that and lifting their eyes to find hope, to think, this doesn't have to be my story. I don't have to repeat the pattern that is in my family. I don't have to, you know, I'm not stuck here. I think that's really powerful. And you don't just do that in the summer, Brandon. You are also a life coach for a high school. And this is where sports comes in. And if you didn't hear me earlier, my husband is a sports fanatic. And whenever there's a parenting issue, he's going to try to solve it with a sports analogy for sure. We've all heard about the blind dad watching the football game from heaven. I can't even tell you how many times. I won't go there. But tell us about your ministry at the high school. What do you do? And it's really a lot of what you've already been talking about, just being there and investing in them and showing you care.
Yeah. So I've been a life coach at the local high school for now 14th season with their football team, and about 4 years with the baseball team. And what that really encompasses is spending time with the players. I tell them all the time, I can't give you playing time. I can't make you a better athlete. I can't help you in schoolwork, because I don't even know how that even happens anymore. But what I can do is be a guy who listens to you and maybe help you and guide you in some things that you're struggling with. And that could be their playing time and all that stuff, but then mm-hmm. walk them through on, well, how do you help in this situation? And then, of course, I've had a lot of them. They've had a lot of things. A lot of these students have had some tragic stuff happen in their lives. Mm-hmm. And just being there to listen to them and guide them. Even recently at our baseball team, one of our pitchers, his dad just recently died.
Mm.
And so, so just tough. To be able to hug him, tell him that I care, you know, on senior night when his dad should be there. You know, that's the big moments. Those are the pivotal moments that can change. Because if no one talks to that kid, then who knows what path he'll take. And so because he's got a baseball career in college, you know, and we're trying to, hey, you got to do that. You got to keep moving forward. And so the whole idea of life coaching is just being with these kids, walking through them, praying with them, and just enjoying the sport that they're in. And even though I'm not a big baseball guy, but I love students and they love baseball, so I have to love it in a sense. So just getting to know it, they get to teach me and all that kind of stuff. And so just entrenching myself in their own little world of sports, which...
You know, I think you hit on something really important there that I want to make sure I emphasize. That is a great way to build relationships, is to let kids teach you something. Mm. They love to be in that position because they're taught everything everywhere they go. And everywhere they're told, oh, you don't know how life works yet, and you need to learn about algebra, and you need to learn about driving, and you need to learn about getting a job, and all of these other things. But when we can reverse that dynamic and they can teach us something, even if it's something as silly as how a social media platform works, or how a video game works, or how baseball is played, what the rules are, that is a great way to start asking questions. It's something they're passionate about that you take an interest in. And another thing that you said reminded me of a past guest that we had on, Keith Garvin. He's a news anchor, and he's working on his doctoral degree in apologetics, and about the epidemic of fatherlessness. And just how so many, especially these boys on the team, whose fathers either are physically absent or emotionally or mentally absent or spiritually absent. And I can't imagine for that boy that you were there with what that must have meant to his mom, because it's so hard. Like, how do you walk around saying, hey, my son really doesn't have a good father. Can you come and be that? Like, that's a really hard thing to ask. But just having you there and not having to ask, not having that barrier, I think is amazing. Well, we're at our end here. And so I'd love to hear any concluding thoughts you have, and the fact that you wrote a sports devotional book too, which was great.
Sure. I think what I would love for people to really understand the most is, I think us as older people, we do a lot of complaining about the next generation. We spend a lot of time talking about it instead of doing something about it. And I think if we could just get from words to actions and actually be the hands and feet of Jesus, we would actually start seeing change in a generation. And it just takes, and I think it's the church. The church has to step up and really invest into schools, not into bigger church buildings. Let's go invest into the schools. And I think that's when you're going to see a lot of change.
That is such a good word, Brandon. And this is coming from a man who is clearly walking what he's talking. I mean, you are with Youth for Christ. You are a life coach at a high school. You are a dad. You're a family pastor. I mean, you have given your life to this, and you have heard that challenge straight from Brandon Kennard, that don't just complain, do something. And if you don't know what to do, the first and most important thing that you can do is pray. Pray for Brandon and pray for others who are in this position of youth ministry leading. Pray for this generation of kids. Every time you're thinking, oh, a complaint about this generation, turn that complaint into a prayer. And that is something that has immeasurable value. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next time. On Friday, we'll have another episode of Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. And in the meantime, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And we'll see you next time here, Prescribing Hope for Healthy Families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.